Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who made the morning and spread it over the prairies into the faces of the young ones, nodding with joy, and into the windows of even the most miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star that just happens to be where you are in the universe, to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, there we go. Welcome, everybody, on this wonderful celebration of music and stories of hope.
Wonderful to see you all, and the message of hope that we want to share today is the hope that our friends and our family give to us.
Now let us stand and sing hymn number 245, Joy to the World. I draw your attention to our announcements in the order of service, and as many of you have noticed, we have such a wonderful opportunity to share in everyone's gifts of crafting and baking and photographing and creating. So go back to the Ina's Elshop Sanctuary after the service and buy as much as you want. In addition to that, I would invite everybody who is interested to write a letter to the editor about marriage equality. And if you would like the press release that Sarah Hoyt and Marissa Larson prepared, contact them. They'll send it, and you can use some of that same language. We need to get that stuff in the newspaper. They did not print our press release in the Mercury, so we need to agitate with joy. Ours is a welcoming community where warm connections are made. Knowing sometimes the face with the most cheer can hide the deepest grief in the darkest time of year. Ours is a sharing community where love amplifies our joys, a caring community where our love lessens our sorrows. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, please share a brief personal joy or sorrow.
I'm Grace McMillan, and thanks to Obamacare, I will have insurance for the first time in 6 years, starting January 1st. So I just think that people should know that it's really working for some people, including me.
Mike Bonilla, last week we had a joy that we celebrated 10 years of being open as a business here in town, and it's kind of a big milestone for us, so, yeah.
Cool.
I'm Mickey Ray. And I think I probably speak for all of us. It's so nice to have Slavomir back here again. Our shining star, ta-da!
I'm Pat Embers, and I'm very happy to have my husband Ken Embers home after a long trip in Vietnam.
Marchin, and I won't be here to celebrate it with you, but I'm going to be 65 on January 1st, so that's a big, talk about a milestone.
All right. May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts, especially for those of us who have lost a loved one in this last year, and of course for all the loved ones we've lost. Let us hold them in our heart on this day. All right.
Yeah.
Nathan and crew. All right, let's help Nathan Albin. Come on, guys. And gals. And ringing phones. Ringle bells.
I've got my little reindeer helper here. All right. So today we're in the service, we're talking about two very special words. We're talking about joy and we're talking about hope. I decided that I would share a very special story about joy and hope with you. I guess maybe, do we all know what joy is? Yell it out. What's joy? Yell some words at me, and then I'll repeat them. Happiness. Anybody else? Yes.
Joy is something that you're excited.
Yeah, you're excited about something that makes you joyful. Yes.
Fun.
Fun, yes. Yes, all of those are good. So here's my special story I want to talk about. Does everybody know who these two fish are?
Nemo.
Well, this one's Nemo. What's this one?
Dorothy.
Who is it?
Dad.
It's his dad. Do you know his name?
Dorothy. No.
That's close. We're going to talk about Dory. His name is Marlin.
Marlin,
that's right. He's got a fish name, but he's not a marlin. He's a clownfish, right? But he's not very funny.
Nemo is a clownfish too.
That's right. Nemo's a clownfish too. And Nemo is one of the things that gives Marlin joy, right? He enjoys spending time with Nemo. Yes?
He is supposed to have a mom.
That's right, he is.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a mom.
He doesn't, that's right. But he does have a very wonderful dad. Okay, so Nemo, he did have a mom, that's right. So Nemo is something that causes great joy for Marlin. But what happens? One day, when they're out sort of at the edge of the Great Barrier Reef, what happens?
And Nemo gets in the net.
That's right. So you be the net, Maya. Can you be the net? Can you take Nemo? And then you get taken in a boat. Nemo gets taken in a boat. He gets driven far away. Marlin tries to keep up, but he can't keep up. And now he doesn't feel...
Then he got lost.
That's right. Okay, we got to hang on to this special picture for a second. So here, he's got a smile on, but he doesn't feel this way anymore because he lost Nemo. Here's how he feels. How does he feel?
Sad,
that's right. Any other words? Yes.
He gets in a tank.
Ah, yeah, Nemo gets in a tank, that's right. And Marlin
and
can't.
He's sad that he lost his fish.
He's very sad. In fact, I would say he feels hopeless. He has no hope. he tried to keep up with this boat. There's no way this little tiny fish can keep up with a boat, and now he thinks he's never going to see his son again. And then who does he meet?
Dory.
Dory. And Dory keeps giving him hope all through the movie, right? All through the movie, anytime Marlin starts to give up, and he gives up a lot of times, Dory picks him back up. Yeah, a smile is just a frown upside down, or the other way around. Does he look? Yeah, he's got a smile, but his eyes are on the wrong side of his face. So Dory, all through the movie, helps Marlin out, right? Oh, yeah, what's your question?
I have that movie.
You have it?
Too.
Yeah, we have it, too.
Yeah.
See, it's a great movie. I agree. It's a great movie. And, okay, we'll see how high we can count later. Did you have a question? Oh, she has it, and do you like to watch it? Yeah, it's great. Okay, so, I want to tell you something that gives me both joy and hope. It's when I look at you and all of these people out here, I realize that from time to time, we're all going to be this Marlin, right? I just can't help it. Sometimes we have bad days, and we feel sad, and we maybe feel hopeless, right? And it's hard to find joy when we feel hopeless. But also out there, if you look around you, there are lots of Dories out there, right? There are lots of people who can help us out, and we can also be Dory for people, too. So I want to think about this. Yeah, one more question. What is it? I have no idea where you got that.
I got it from Halloween.
Ooh, and you still have it. You didn't eat it.
You don't eat it.
Oh, okay. So I want to think about this as we go through this week and maybe even through the coming year, okay? When you're feeling sad and you're feeling like Marlin, look around you. There will be Dories that can help you out, okay? This is the special thing about families, about friends, about a group like the UU Fellowship here. And also, if you're feeling like a Dory someday, if you're feeling really happy, very positive, also look around. See if there's a Marlin that you can help out, okay? See if there's somebody who you can give hope, because together, we can all find joy together much easier than if we're alone, okay?
I see the beautiful curve of the pregnant belly shaped by a soul within, and the earth itself and the planets and the spheres. I have gotten the hint. There is something about circles creation likes. Let us share from our circle of love so that we may hold and care for more and more our care, ever giving birth to more. Hope is a thing with feathers. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in eternity it asked a crumb of me. All right, a little coordination always helps. Let us stand and sing the first two verses of Silent Night, hymn number 251. Thank you. Please be seated. Recently, the Caring Committee shared a letter sent to Shirley Hobrock, and I'd like to share it with you. This is from someone who attended a few times and found connection, even though it was for a short while. Dear Shirley, I am currently in St. Louis, Missouri, in a residential treatment center for eating disorders of anorexia and bulimia. I will be in a residential treatment here for a few months, and then I will be at another place. I would like to put out on the concerns or thinking about list for the fellowship. I am having a hard battle against my own wants to end my life, and it's a very scary place to be when your thoughts drift in that direction. I am looking for a UU fellowship here in Missouri, and hopefully I will find one soon. I love letters, so any words of encouragement from the UU Fellowship of Manhattan you would like to send on would be greatly appreciated. I am looking to dedicate my life to service. And she shared this wonderful poem that I share with you now by William Butler Yeats. He wishes for the cloth of heaven. Had I heaven's embroidered cloths and wrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and the half light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I've spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly because you tread on my dreams. If you feel compelled, I invite you to look at our order of service, the address and the name of the person you could send a card of hope and encouragement. August 1953, the month and year of my birth, so thank you, Mom. August 1953, a nurse gathers up the afterbirth. My mother had been howling but now could sleep. By this time, I am gone, also gathered up and wheeled out. Above my jaundiced face, the nurses hover. Outside, a scab commands a city bus. The picketers battle cops, and 10,000 Soviet conscripts in goggles kneel and cover their eyes. Mushroom cloud above the Gobi and slithering toward Stalin's brain. The blood clot takes its time. Ethel Rosenberg has rocketed to the afterlife, her hair shooting flame. The afterbirth is sloshing in a pail, steadied by an orderly who curses when the elevator doors stay shut. I am soul and body and medical waste foaming in the sewers of St. Paul. I am not yet aware of gratitude or shame. I do know light is everywhere.
Thank you.
Tidings of joy. How much joy music can carry. Joy is not a thought, it's something you feel. And music helps us feel deeply, broadly, and highly. Victor Havel, in his book Disturbing the Peace, states that hope is an ability to work for something because it is good. The more unpropitious the situation in which we demonstrate hope, the deeper the hope is. Where there is no hope, leadership fails to build a bridge from a sustaining vision of what is possible to its emergence in the world. Hope's enemy is fear. Its potency to do good is found in the faith in the goodness of people and their ability to choose and do good. We all have fear, and I hope we all have faith in goodness. The question is, do you have more fear or faith in the goodness that's within you and that you can connect and share with others? Our moral responsibility as Unitarian Universalists is to choose the bold models of love which call us out of the darkness of fear into the light of hope. As we give ourselves to our vision of a bold model, we open up the space for joy. And we know that the world would benefit greatly from less fear and more joy. Jacob Ding Mak, one of the lost boys of Sudan, was a recruit at the Atlanta, Georgia Police Academy in 2012. At 33, after being in the United States for almost 12 years, he believed that becoming a policeman was his best choice of ascension from war-ravaged Sudan into the American middle class. In 2001, after the U.S. granted refugee status to nearly 4,000 people, the lost boys of Sudan, Jacob arrived in Georgia with one change of clothes and a promise of support for 3 months by the government. He was just surrounded by alien things, flush toilets, microwaves, incomprehensible job applications. He came to America believing the streets were paved with gold. This was the land of promise, where everyone could find their place in this wonderful world of opportunity. But soon he saw how many people lived in dire circumstances. He had to adapt. The pathway for his life in Sudan before the Civil War was clear. You followed the old ways. You would care for your father's cattle like generations before he. In America, you needed ambition. He got a job at Hilton, stocking the minibar in the rooms where all the people enjoyed conviviality and a good time. He struggled and juggled with low-paying jobs. He slept for no more than 4 hours a night. He brought his wife, Lith, whom he fell in love with a refugee camp from Kenya. He won repeated promotions at the Hilton. He earned a bachelor's degree from Georgia State University, supported family members in Africa and the States on $25,000 a year. He had been illiterate until he was 13. Jacob was accepted as a recruit by the police academy in 2001. Only one out of 15 applicants ever make it into the process. He said in his application at the end, he wanted to help innocent citizens honorably. Honorably. What a great, great, great thought. Being admitted to the police academy allowed him to dream that getting his badge would provide a way up and out. Although his struggles were centered in the moment, his sights were set on what was possible, and he had an indomitable will to survive. A trainee in the police academy in Georgia, Atlanta, you have 3 chances to pass the extremely challenging 22-week course. Jacob failed in his first attempt. It was physically, emotionally, and mentally draining. In the second try at the academy, he had gained the physical strength necessary to climb over walls, to carry big dummies across rivers, and all those kinds of things that would be mostly impossible for all of us. He managed to gain that strength. And when he was close to failing, which he often was in the second attempt, he would let his thoughts drift back to that 2-month walk from the Sudan to Ethiopia. That was the worst, he told himself. There is nothing more difficult than I have gone through. They're just trying to see whether I can handle the stress, whether I'm strong enough not to quit. Jacob did well with the physical demands of training, but excelled in the classroom, learning criminal procedure and Georgia code. And anybody knows anything about law and codes, run. They are tough, they're complex, they're Byzantine. He was seen as a valuable team member by his trainees, fellow trainees, and fellow students. As a boy, he had been shot at many times, but had never handled a gun until the police academy. His inability to do so exasperated him. He'd pause without any apparent reason before reloading, and sometimes he'd fire at the wrong targets. He tried to figure out why he was unable to improve his skills in handling firearms. He had certainly overcome more. His father, a rebel soldier, was killed in the Sudanese Civil War. The bombardment of his village by government tanks and planes, the barefoot trek at the age of 7, along with thousands of other tiny refugees to a camp in Ethiopia, the loss of comrades consumed by lions in the bush and crocodiles in the Gilo River. The starvation was so severe that he ate leaves. Leaves off trees and bushes. With the help of one officer whom he had an easygoing, trusting rapport, it's amazing how that helps when you're trying to learn something that causes anxiety and fear, and you have someone there saying, you can do it, relax, focus. He was able to pass the firearms test. But as hard as he tried, he could not pass the driving test. He got his driver's license without any, driver's ed or anything like that when he was 23 or 24. But his friend said he was never good. He always coasted through stop signs. He often couldn't back up into a place unless it was like 30 feet long. But he couldn't do it. He had 4 tries, and in the 4th try, he just almost made it. He hit the cone, just tapped it, and that was enough for him to fail his 2nd try. He received official notification that he failed. The police officers who had worked to help him pass all the tests asked Jacob if he had any questions. He said, "No, ma'am, I do not have any questions. But one thing I would like to say is that I appreciate the opportunities given to me here. The instructors worked very hard to help me." Price, one of the officers, replied, "One thing I want to say to you is that you have been a positive light. Jacob was philosophical about his failure. He believed he had given it his best shot. He had done everything he could, and it just was not meant to be. So he needed to move on. He needed to find a better job, a better ability to support his family and not work so much. In a couple of days, the Atlanta police personnel officer recommended Jacob for a job in the code enforcement division for a civilian job inspecting substandard housing. Jacob gleefully, with joy, accepted the job. Early in his training, Jacob helped inspect a complex of dilapidated apartment buildings where vagrants were squatting. The owners, a husband and wife, stood by their Mercedes and made small talk with Jacob. Eventually, they asked Jacob about his background. He told them his story. The wife said, "That's amazing," as she wiped tears from her face. She said to Jacob, "You should talk to those deadbeats out there that don't want to do anything and tell them how hard you had to work to make it to where you are now." Jacob looked at her, looked her right in the eye, and said, "Ma'am, they are struggling very hard." "What matters," he said, "is your determination, your dedication, your ability to move through challenges." Jacob said, "The American dream, while it may not be streets paved with gold, is a continual process. Do it honorably." How do you live out your dream? You're part of the American dream. How do you overcome difficult obstacles? Does the voice of fear that says, "No, no, no," have more control than the voice of hope which says, "Yes, yes, try, try, you can succeed"? Hope is often not the easy way. It requires courage of conviction, a will to prevail through the toughest of times. You see, you must nurture hope. And if you do, you will find that there is more room in your psyche, your heart, your mind, your being for doing good. And then, yes, greater experience of joy as you succeed and you succeed together. Joy finds a place in your life that's more consistent, more available, more ready to show its happy, shining face. Practice loving kindness with each breath. Let joy shine from your heart and share it with all those who need it. Let us sing hymn number 256, "Winter Night." Stand as you are able and join in song. Oh, yeah. Well, when they're ready, they'll let you know. Please be seated. I'd like to share these closing words from Annie Lamott. Hope is a revolutionary patience. Hope begins in the dark. The stubborn hope that if you just show up and try to do the right thing, the dawn will come. You wait and watch and work. You don't give up. Then hope comes.
Thank you.